my experience has been actually the homesteading and for me a rural life has not well, maybe forced community is one word. You know, when you and I have to explain to Gabino why the pigs that kind of belong to us, but we're actually at Shannon's house, knocked over his trash. And did your dogs rummage through my trash? No, it was my pigs, but those were Shannon's pigs. Well, they're at Shannon's, but they're mine and Craig's. Welcome back to the Till and Keep podcast. My name is Jason Craig. If you've been a listener for any time, which can't be that long because we just started this podcast, you know that we're discussing the intersection of things, which again is what all podcasts claim to be doing. Specifically for us, it's all the things that cross paths, especially in the life of a father, which is culture, economics, finance, the practicalities of work, running a household, ordering a household, leading a household, leaving, returning, all of those things, they cross paths, especially in a father's life. You know, academics have a big debate about whether culture is upstream of politics or politics upstream or downstream of culture. And what I've come to realize is that whoever's right, the father is downstream of all of it. He picks up all the trash, all the goodness, all the problems. And that's what this podcast is about. It's about tilling and keeping. If you've missed some of the other ones, you know, that comes from the book of Genesis, where us men, one of the predominant realities of our life is that we have to work and that we get to work. And depending on how you view that, is whether you get to or you have to. But when we till is when we work. That's part of the command to work the garden. The garden was not created by Adam. So when he was told to till the garden, he was also told to keep it. Which we can interpret as maintaining the integrity and the nature of the garden itself, so that when we work, we also don't destroy. And some of us don't have an easy time actually believing that we can work, that we can progress, that we can grow without having to destroy or leave behind something else. And in that discussion, it seems that a lot of fathers, a lot of families have an agrarian moment at one point. Specifically, they want to someone at some point, whether the husband or the wife, they say, as, particularly after they have a couple kids, maybe they say, wouldn't it be great if we could just go live on a farm? Wouldn't it be great if we could live differently, if we could live more simply, if we could enjoy the fruits of our labor, if we could work with one another? I think every family goes through that at some point and has that what I like to call the agrarian moment. Today on the Till and Keep podcast, I have my friend Craig Tafaro. Craig and I met through Fraternus, possibly we're both still a part of. Craig was doing some writing for Fraternus, and I don't remember what it was, but I picked up that he seemed to be very just perceptive to truth. Just I liked it. I liked what you were writing. We met at a couple
of. You told me you have a very simple and homely style.
Simple and homely. He remembers it. He's actually got it on a t-shirt. All right. Craig Tafaro, simple and homely. I've gotten to know him more because we saw you at a couple of events. We did an event in Bostic. You were there. And then I think we really picked up steam. We do some workshops on our farm that are mildly organized. And you came to one. We were killing a pig. We killed two pigs. With Jim Curley, if you guys recall, was on this podcast. We talked about pig killing. I think Craig has actually joined. If anything, I have a cult here. It's a cult following, not of me, but of Jim Curley. There are two types of people in the world, people that know Jim Curley and people that don't. Jim was on the podcast before.
Yeah.
And so Craig went to one of those workshops where we killed two pigs. We ate one of them, butchered the other one, cured some hams.
Drink some beer.
Yes. And I think it was it there we had the conversation? I said, well, there's some land across the street.
It is.
Okay. And
it was an open invitation to anyone there.
That's right. So
buy the land.
Buy the land. Yeah. There's 13 acres or 14 or what's it?
You probably know 14,
somewhere between 13 and 16. Right across the street from my house. In fact, there's a tunnel connecting the properties. So I tell you, I have an underground tunnel to another Catholic farm. I was often telling people, hey, that land's across the street, because I knew that it was not on the market, but it was potentially available because the family was considering, you know, the owners of it, I could tell were inching towards, and that could become anything across the street. So a lot of people feigned interest. And before I knew it, though, Craig was putting offers down. I mean, I didn't even know how fast it was going for you. But as some, and I'm allow you to fill in the gaps, because I actually don't know some of these things. The reason it made sense for you is you were living in the city in Charlotte, but you were already homesteading significantly more. And the way I knew that maybe this guy could actually make it is I think your wife had showed up. I don't know if it was the pig workshop or maybe this was later, one of the homestead workshops. First time I met Abby.
She wasn't allowed at the pig workshop.
That's right. Men only. That's right. That's why there's so much beer. But one of the later ones, but my experience of you was the same, which was I asked her, is he always like this? Because he was just wide open helping with scalding the pig and getting everything ready. And I think this guy got it. So tell me when. So that's the short story. You were homesteading. I want you to fill in some gaps though on how you got to that in Charlotte, why that happened, and then where you are now. So back me up. Tell me about, you are from Louisiana, but the way you ended up in North Carolina is?
Valmont Abbey College. And it is a small liberal arts Catholic college with a Benedictine monastery on campus, just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay. And what'd you study?
I studied political philosophy and literature. In the context of the honors program, which was a great books program in the Catholic liberal arts tradition.
Okay.
And I was all over the place with college ideas and where I wanted to go, what I wanted to do. I had everything from the Air Force Academy and studying aerospace engineering to music school for classical and jazz guitar.
Wait, these are things you were considering after Belmont? At the same time.
Yeah. And okay. So when I was in high school looking at college options, I was all over the place.
Okay.
And I think I can see it very clearly now through divine providence. Belmont Abbey was the place that came out on top for me, in large part due to a visit there and the time with the monks and the peace that I felt on campus there. Came together, and there was a nice scholarship too.
Okay.
Financially.
Scholarships work, people.
And then I stayed in North Carolina. I thought for sure I was going back to Louisiana. You know, why wouldn't I?
Right.
It's the place with the most culture in the entire great American states.
Catholic culture,
even. That's right. But I met a young lady who I wanted to be my wife. And as I was
another Abby,
graduation,
another Abby.
I met Abby at the Abbey. Yes. And she is now my wife, has been so for just about 9 years. And she kept me in North Carolina.
Wow. Okay. So after college, then you decided to stay. Her folks are in North Carolina. By the way, I think that's the norm.
That is pretty normal.
The reason I'm asking is my oldest, you know her, Margaret Mary. She's 14. She's starting to have, you know, very much appear as a woman and thoughts of marriage and stuff. And I keep thinking, but we're okay because they usually settle near the lady.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
I hope that's the, it's going to be here though, now that you've set the custom. But after school, what'd you do for work? Or when did you guys get married? When you were in school?
We got married about a year after we graduated.
Okay.
So Abby lived with her parents and worked in various jobs, kind of filling the time between graduating and marrying me.
Okay.
And I worked in financial services.
You guys were all expecting that on the podcast, right? Yeah. This liberal arts guy, and he's going to end up in banking.
So I worked in a very large mutual fund company.
How did that happen? How did you go from the school? That didn't seem like the next step. So what was it? Were you just looking for an efficient?
I just needed a job to pay my student loans and live.
Okay.
And I don't know exactly why.
Did you know someone or?
No, I didn't know anyone there. I knew no one that worked there. I had never heard of this company.
The reason I'm asking this, in case you guys are wondering, is you know, Craig's sitting next to, we're sharing a microphone, but I'm also keeping my distance because there's blood and guts all over his leg from he was late for this podcast. I had to go pick him up, and there was a steer hanging. Craig is now a butcher, just to cross the street from it, but I don't want to get there yet. So this is why it's intriguing as to how and why he got into finance.
Yeah, I just looked for a job, and I applied to some business consulting jobs. I applied to some finance.
Just like American college students are going to start consulting. Who are you going to consult?
I don't know. Figured maybe they'd pay me something to do.
I got ideas.
I didn't think I had ideas. I
needed a job. Okay.
I've been doing that for 4 years. So.
All right.
Anyway, so yeah, for anyone familiar with the financial services industry, I got my Series 7 and 63 FINRA licenses. I got my Certified Financial Planner designation a few years later. Worked as a personal financial advisor, helping people manage retirement funds.
Okay.
I worked with about, by the time I was leaving there, I worked with about 200 households. Okay. And they had anywhere from $1 to $10 million invested with them.
Is it common in the industry to call it households?
Fairly common.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But at some point you began, and I don't know the answer to this. Mm-hmm. I know some of this, but you began homesteading in your backyard. Mm-hmm. Why and how did that happen?
We started on our apartment porch.
Nice.
Yeah, when we first got married, we were in an apartment for a couple of years. And then as soon as we bought our house, we just went wide open. We had a yard. We could suddenly do all these things that I had, maybe I think more me than Abby originally had dreamed of doing. She didn't take much convincing, but a little bit when we got our first flock of
a little convincing? Layers.
A little convincing, yeah. But she jumped right in. We were started small.
But why? Why? It just?
Yeah. I had grown up gardening. First garden I had was when I was 7. And I begged my parents to give me a plot of the yard that I could turn into a vegetable garden. And they said, sure, go for it. And so I grew, I don't know, cucumbers and tomatoes and cauliflower and broccoli. And
separate from the family?
Strawberries. My family did not garden.
Oh, so you grew up gardening in your garden.
My garden.
So you originated this in your family. That. Okay.
One of my grandmothers liked to garden primarily roses and other ornamentals. And she started doing a little vegetable gardening. I'd help her in her vegetable garden. And then in high school, I worked with a family at our church who, I think it was their full-time business, but it was a side business that they grew tomatoes and maybe peppers. I think it was mostly just tomatoes and peppers. Every little sold it at a roadside stand. I go work in their field. And
wow.
I was attracted to it
from the start. Mm-hmm. Was there you're in banking, mm-hmm. which doesn't jive or seem connected to homesteading, mm-hmm. or gardening. Mm-hmm. Was there, you kept increasing this practice, as I understand it, right? I mean, little by little.
Eventually, we had about a little less than a third of an acre lot in the city. You know, we were just outside of the heart of uptown Charlotte. Not quite into suburbs, but not in like downtown, you know, high rise, right. In between. And by the time we sold the place, we had the backyard and all the front yard. Man, we were those crazy people in the neighborhood.
Naked kids in the back.
Yeah, naked kid. You know, my son learned how to potty, potty train in the grass in the front yard. You know?
Right, as it ought to be. What do you think the purpose of grass is? All right. So this was it increasing? My question is, what was there something you were just enjoying that, or you were rebelling against sort of maybe the order of work that you experienced?
Well, I would definitely rebel.
You were conscious that this was a different way of things.
Yes. I think initially, no, I wasn't fully aware of that. But something inside of me was, and so I was gravitating more towards it. There was a time, you know, I fast forwarded a little bit to the yard and going all in on the yard. There was a period of time where we didn't have that. We were in an apartment for a couple of years, and my outlets were otherwise. My outlets tended to take me away from the home and the family.
This is that running problem.
When I was addicted to running, trail running for a while. And not long after we had our first son and we were starting to look for houses, my wife said, "You can't spend whatever it was, you
know, hours and
hours a week running. You need to find your enjoyment and your satisfaction here at home." And that sounded great, but I still needed something physically to do.
Yeah.
I couldn't just sit and play with the toddler for 30 hours.
I'm going to pause really quick. Now that I'm Craig's neighbor, I see him. And you probably are listening. He has a calm demeanor, and it's generally a calm guy. One time I heard him raise his voice just to get people's attention. And if you've ever seen a duck swim, it's very calm and peaceful on top. Underneath, those little legs are just going a million miles an hour. That's like Craig. So I could see you going from running 30 hours a week to like, well, if I'm going to have a garden, I'm going to have a freaking garden.
Yeah, I'm going to have a freaking
garden. All right. So you had chickens. You were...
Yeah,
composting, sure.
Composting and bees and fruit trees and fruit bushes and vegetable gardens.
Comfrey plots.
Yeah, lots of herbs and medicinal plants. And we started to get into, or Abby did in particular, get into lots of home remedies with herbs and finding ways to use things that might otherwise be waste from the garden or byproducts of.
It's been interesting to me. I don't know if you can confirm it, but it's seen, I think we've said this on other podcasts, can't remember, but the motivations for homesteading from a couple families, typically it seems that the father, you know, wants to work and then hopefully with his family.
Yep.
And that's his gateway, his entry, in that the wife very often has care for the bodies of the body of the family, that they have a tendency to think of things like, whereas the dad's like, I need a more efficient way to split wood. And she's like, I want to get rid of GMOs, a different, they're caring about the health.
Yeah.
But it's that they kind of meet in the middle in homesteading, which is.
Definitely, you can see the complementarity very clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems that's where those things actually can meet up. All right. So you guys were not meeting up on the trail. Your not wife can't have babies and join you.
That's right. She had no interest in joining.
Well, my children are somewhat interested in this long distance running, due to a acquaintance at our shared parish. But my wife, and she's always is poking at me. I use the John Senior quote of, you know, if people would start gardening in their backyard, they could stop the spectacle of jogging. Right. You could stop jogging if you would just turn the garden over. Then you'd be growing food instead of just,
you double dig your garden beds and
I'm not
running.
But I'll let my son, if the sons are gaining some discipline, I guess we'll let them run, but they still have to milk the cows in the morning.
So I think in that time where I first just kind of went all in on establishing backyard gardens and doing these things to fill time, I gradually saw more clearly that I wasn't just filling time, but I was doing productive work, and it was productive work that actually closer to my family and directly providing for them and myself, not just leaving for 8 to 10 hours a day or more to sit in an office and $8 show up in a bank account at the end of a pay period. And that was very satisfying. For me,
the work in the yard.
Work in the yard. Yeah, to look at a patio covered in a couple hundred heads of garlic curing, and realizing, wow, we grew that, and now we don't have to buy garlic from the store. Sure, we could afford whatever garlic we wanted from the store.
Right,
and it wasn't that. It was that we were doing something that was tied directly to our needs. our daily provision that brought us together instead of separating us.
Right.
You know, we have this, most of us find ourselves in work conditions as family men that take us away from our feelings.
Right.
I think most of us wrestle with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's
not comfortable.
That comes up regularly on the podcast if you talk to any dad, it's not comfortable because we have to work and we have to lead, provide, mentor, and guide our family. Yeah. And when those things become in conflict, it's we want to be doing kind of the same thing at the same time with the same act.
Yeah.
And I agree. I don't make my income primarily from farming.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have a commercial dairy, as you know, because you get milk from it.
Yes.
Craig and I have a system, by the way, it's working out. I'm going to declare it publicly. I think it's legal. Is it? No, it's probably not. No. What? No.
To trade services?
Yeah. So Craig has an open, it's illegal, I'm sure. Craig has an open spigot over here at our place to get milk whenever he needs, except a few times we run out.
A sharpened knife.
That's right. And Craig has a knife. So it's been very economical for me because for us, one of the big burdens was, you know, getting our animals processed was a big production for us. Now you're set up but my kids can show up and help. Although I think they threaten help more than actually help. Henry wanted to go do the deer for days, but he put it off.
So I can tell you one of the turning points.
Yeah. Okay. Back to
the story. Turning points, recognizing, I think we should do more. I think we can do more than just the backyard, and that we might want to find a way to give up this lucrative banking work in the city altogether. I was at one of these corporate town hall events, which I always hated. You know, I loathed them with some deep loathing.
Loads with deep loathing.
Yes. There was one in particular where the theme the whole time was life work balance, which really just meant how can you spend more time providing greater productivity to this corporation? And
wait, so was the emphasis? I would think the emphasis was they're recognizing mental health issues. So maybe.
Sure. I mean, in words, really.
Okay.
But. Like, not seriously.
Because their end was to make better employees, to make more money.
Right. So, sure, I'll recognize your mental health needs so that it wasn't really a care of the person.
Okay, so maybe in defense, hold on. Okay, maybe in defense.
To defend the town hall.
No. You know me better than that. I'm trying, though. I'm hearing the voices of friends in my background. Like, there are people that do care for people in the corporate world.
Of course.
But you're saying
I was in management for a while, and yes, I deeply cared for the
but
people
the,
that worked.
But the arch reality is the purpose of us being here is not a direct economic, I mean, meaning communal thing. I mean, we're making money for this company. Right. And okay, great. That's your job. You have a job doing that. But I recall how did you told me you actually got out of direct financial services.
Yes.
And maybe the realization, if you want to finish the town hall thing, finish that. But then I want you to go into how you moved into replacing the employees that you cared about. So finish the town hall.
Yes. So I kept thinking in that town hall, I don't want to have to balance what I see as the important things in my life, my faith, my family, the work at home, with the demands of this work. But that didn't seem like the right goal. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seemed like integration. That word came to me in that town hall. No, I want an integrated life. Mm-hmm. I don't want a balanced life.
I don't want a balanced life. Yeah.
And I think even just calling it life work balance indicates that it's not integrated and can't be because the goal is finding a balance, not actually bringing these things together. Right. So we're going to have two separate ends of the scale. We're not going to take the things off the scale ends and put them together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I thought. I want to do that. I don't know how. I didn't know how. Still figuring that out.
Yeah, it wasn't. Still don't know how. I bet your children, I don't think it was bringing them to the office.
No, No, I've done that. I did that once.
All right,
Out of necessity.
so at some point the talent you changed in within the banking world, you
Yeah,
got out.
I was getting burnt out on 200 households.
Okay.
Because I figured out a lot of my colleagues, not getting burnt out, were very good at not really caring about the people that they worked with and managed money for. And I'm not saying that that's a blanket occurrence. That I know lots of good financial planners that do care about their clients. In the environment that I worked in, there were constant changes in goalposts, increased quotas. So who I had to care about kept growing. And I found myself kind of hitting a limit that I couldn't emotionally invest myself in 200 plus families and still go home and want to be in conversation with my wife. I remember times I get home, I spent, 10 hours in conversation with other people. And I get home, I don't want to talk to you. And I'm like,
Well,
sorry, Abby,
I know, but then
I am burnt out.
so but then you're so you guys have kids,
Yeah.
so she's at home all day with people incapable of
I'm capable of conversation.
right. And then I've had that experience. I come home, I'm on the phone, hey, we're doing this podcast,
Right.
you're doing these things all day, and you get home and it's no, I don't want to talk.
Right.
You under you have a sort of I well, you have a sympathy for it. Could we just veg out and watch
Right,
TV?
right.
And you know,
Man, yeah, we didn't own a television, but there were times where I thought, I get
I
that
would do,
idea.
yeah, that works together. I see. I mean, I think in my family, we did, we all went off, to school, to work, and we came home, we watched TV together. That was the family activity. All right. So, you got burned out on that. So you switched.
So I switched. I started working in a kind of a back office regulatory compliance job, or it wasn't really just regulatory
Sounds
compliance, but
so.
a little bit. I was doing more data analytics and doing some database management stuff so that we could report on regulatory
Okay.
compliance.
All right, so we need to wrap up the boring part of this,
The
which is
boring.
banking. But the so you but tell me the
But
story.
I ended to wrap that part up.
All right.
So I moved out of this regulatory compliance reporting stuff into more of a true IT role where I was developing digital robots to replace attorneys and bankers at the
Okay.
bank.
So you were replacing your
No,
colleagues.
replacing
Okay.
colleagues.
All right,
I didn't like that.
so you reached the height of the evil corporate
I
empire.
did. I got to the peak where I was,
You were done.
next, the robots were going to replace me.
Yeah, they were coming for you. Okay. So this was the point you were experiencing the homestead. You're on this, I guess, upward mobility of the job that you kind of fell into out of college. It wasn't some
Sure.
kind of
Yeah, I
passion.
stumbled into it and made it work.
Because it seems even strange to me, knowing you, knowing the depth of your thought. I think, in case anyone over romanticizes, Craig's been across the street for a year full time, 2 years around.
Yeah, I guess we moved into that place 1 year ago.
Yeah, so we're
So about a year
it's both still busy as dads,
and a half.
but the few interactions we get to have depth of thought, it's like, oh, this is refreshing. So it's surprising to hear as you sit next to me covered in blood with your flannel and your hat. So you guys were probably wide open doing what a lot of people do, which is looking for opportunities, doing spreadsheets of potential businesses. And just to tell the story, well, a side story, Craig had, when he was opening his butcher shop, I did him the unsolicited favor of writing a press release, which then
Where you
alert.
married my
Oh
wife.
yes, in the press release, they thought I didn't know my or his name. So I submitted it as Jason Craig about Craig and Abby Tafaro. They thought I had made a mistake and said Jason Craig and his wife Abby Tafaro, which Abby's comment was, oh, I'm one of those women that won't take your last name. Our polygamous cult here. I took on another wife here. In that, so I submitted that. That made a little bit of a kerfuffle, if that's how that's pronounced,
Sure.
with zoning. And
Yeah.
we won't go into deep, maybe another podcast on the details, but I said at that meeting, we went and a lot of the community vouched for you, and I was there. I said that most people, when they go to a zoning meeting, it is someone from the outside who's moved there who wants to do something new, some new business, some new enterprise. And they would like permission to alter the state in the reality of that place. Right. You know, because a lot of people might feel bad about it. Like, don't tell me what to do with my land. But
right.
in reality, most zoning, especially in rural situations, at least, is I would like to convert something that was rural, you know, agrarian or homesteading or, mm-hmm. or just land to something commercial or enterprise right. Or maybe hospitality. Usually it is, I would like to alter this place. Mm-hmm. Whereas at that meeting, my point to that board was that you actually were invited to that place to maintain something that was already there in some ways and to continue to actually fill a need that we had. So the background for listeners is that Craig asked me, when I said the land was available, he saw the land first and then he thought, well, what, and he asked me, what could we do? What's needed around there? And I said right away, I don't know if this was before COVID.
Yep.
Okay. I said, we need a butcher, because as a homesteader and farmer, I can tell you all of us farmers around here, you know, we had appointments at meat processing facilities for animals we didn't own yet. Mm-hmm. That's how, I mean, they were just growing, consolidating. So the work is not the same as it was 10 years ago when I first brought my first Charlie the Charbroiled Charlet in our first steer we raised. And so you asked me and I said, it's a butcher shop. So that's what I said in that zoning meeting. We needed that. When, what was the progression of you were at home and you were just hunting potential enterprises. You were looking at potential places.
Yeah, we had casually looked for other land to move out outside of the city.
Near Charlotte?
Mm-hmm. In around Charlotte, we had looked on the east side, we looked north, we had looked south in South Carolina, a little bit west. But we hadn't until you helped us find this place and we started to talk about ideas of what this community needed. We hadn't really pursued seriously any ideas of enterprises on those properties that we had looked at casually.
You would have been commuting.
I would have been commuting into the city.
Okay. So that's a big jump to go from homesteading with a commute, which is the more common, mm-hmm. perhaps recommended mm-hmm. Method for people.
Right.
But you went full in.
Yes. As we looked at those other properties, this is over maybe the 2-year period or so, it never quite seemed right. I know that might sound squishy or something, but we would consider the facts in front of us. We'd think through family issues, relationships, and just say that why. And I think a lot of times what would come up is the move to the land would have meant around that parish mm-hmm. in the city, and it would mean more time away for me from family mm-hmm. because of the commute. Probably less time available to do the things we really wanted to do.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting.
And just, it seemed presumptive in some way for us to think, well, we can just go buy land and plant ourselves in whatever community we want and farm it.
It is presumptive.
Right, yeah. It is. And so when you recommended considering this land, suddenly things made a little more sense because you were here. I knew you. I knew some others through now shared parish.
Mm-hmm.
The community maybe had a way to welcome us. We weren't just going to plant and say, we're here.
Right.
Now buy the things we want you to buy. That's from right. us.
You Here's know? My boutique honey.
That's right. And so that changed our considerations quite a bit.
Right.
To have a connection to you as an immediate neighbor. And to have you recommend to us an actual need in the community.
So, and what I've seen, I mean, I don't know how many of my animals you've killed.
Fair number.
But it's an interesting thing that, you know, Robert Nisbet talks about, and I repeat this, and it's just community is formed by solving problems together.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean people are problems that need to be solved. That's the wrong interpretation of that. but it's that men particularly do much better for, you know, a lot of the community formation, the talk of community is based all on intentionality
mm-hmm.
and shared interests,
mm-hmm.
Which to me, honestly, does not sound like Love Your Neighbor at all. Mm-hmm. It sounds like our modern obsession. Like,
I'm going to find my tribe.
I'm going to find my tribe, and I'm going to make it work, or I'm going to find people that fill this void I feel within me. Mm-hmm. Versus, I'm going to love the people close to me. Mm-hmm. But there is the way community has been formed. Actually, I mean, if we look at the guilds of Christendom and the is recognizing mutual need, and that can be spiritual, right? Which is
right.
Mark Barnes of New Polity he mentioned one time to me, it was fascinating, that the reason the medieval guilds were obsessed with like their craft and purgatory was that purgatory, they recognized, was time in their life where they will need their community completely because they're incapable of helping themselves. Right. So they need those prayers. So don't you forget to light that freaking candle, right? Every Thursday for me forever. But also with their craft, because we need someone who's good at making candles and bread and et cetera. So what's been your experience of sort of, you know, you had a decent community in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Maybe you were distancing because your way of life was tending towards homesteading.
Yes.
And a home-based economic reality. You're here, but and you're cultivating, you're new, which I appreciate. But a lot of people, they think, I'm going to show up, I'm going to buy my way in to a community, and then I'm going to grow whatever I want. And people are going to, you know, it's just, and there's a lot of failure with that model. But I had to pull you away from someone's steer over there, someone I don't even know. Yeah. What's it been like cultivating in a new community through a service rendered to them?
It's wonderful.
All right.
In the boring part of the story, as you call it,
boring bank part. Did I look interested on the webcam?
Did I have friends in some capacity at work? Yes. Did I have friends through my parish? Yes. Did I truly share in any economic reality and real communal reality with
like a shared people? Love for a like a common love,
right? Yeah. Not really.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, the most would be in the spiritual reality of my friends at my parish, you know, that shared reality of praying, bearing with one another. But what has been striking to me here, and like I said, wonderful, is in what seems like a relatively short amount of time, I've gone from not knowing more than a handful of people to knowing people.
Mm-hmm.
And getting to know them somewhat intimately, because I'm killing their animals and preparing meat that they're going to eat.
Right. Yeah. So they have a story with that animal.
With that animal. I learn about their eating habits. How do they want their meat cut and why? What do they cook? You know, what their family traditions. People who come from different ethnic backgrounds want to share with me traditions from their home countries or their family's home countries. It's been a really delightful experience in a way that I casually knew my neighbors in the city, but they weren't really interested as much as I was in getting to know them. You know,
So
I could be pushy and try and have conversation, but really they wanted to pull in the driveway and go inside.
Mm-hmm.
Here, I think, what's your phrase, that farming around here is a spectator
sport? Yeah.
Yeah. So imagine farming is a spectator sport. Start slaughtering animals on the hilltop between three roads.
Across from the church, yes, by the way.
Across from the church.
Not people, our church.
People little... notice.
Yeah.
And they want to stop by and see what's going on. And I've tended to have this experience in life. I don't know exactly why, but strangers tend to just tell me their life stories. And, you know, a 2-minute interaction.
It's Craig's subtle. It's his subtle smile. It's because he got good at faking listening when he got home from talking to 200 people.
People just drive by and pull in, and then I find out I don't know, the history of the little farm 2 miles down the road and how my daddy did this and he don't like it when other people do that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And suddenly I realized this week I'm amassing a nice little collection of stories.
Yeah.
And characters.
No, I remember when we moved here, we moved to this area. We were bartering for where we lived. Then we bought a 3-acre homestead, and we were putting up a fence. And you know, we were right on the road, so people are spectating on what we're doing. And around here, if you don't know, which you don't know, but to the listeners, it's a growing equestrian area. So most of the people actually are coming here to retire with horses more expensive than my home. Mm-hmm. And so we put up a fence, and then we put out a Jersey cow, Abigail, who you have milked.
Yes.
Abigail went out in that front pasture in the front yard, and all of a sudden people started stopping by. Mm-hmm. And they said, I remember when we all, mm-hmm. and then we'd hang a pig, our hanging tree. Well, our hanging tree at that farm was pig hanging tree at that farm was in the front yard right by the road.
Oh, no.
So I always told the kids, we hang pigs in the front yard as a warning to anyone. This is why we don't have to lock our doors. And people stopped by, and we had one of these old timers stopped by, and with tears in his eyes, he was telling me about, he wanted to come help us butcher a pig because he had forgotten how to do it. And it was such a part of their life. And then he explained on our farm, he was telling us that this little shack that we had rabbits in, how it was the smokehouse for this whole little community. And they used to smoke their hams in there and then bring them to Spartanburg. Mm-hmm. And so I can echo your experience that doing something for and with other people is the fastest way to community. And the reason, and not as if it's a shortcut, it's just, it's organic.
Right.
And the reason I bring it up is, I don't know if you experienced this, but when I moved, cause I'm from North Carolina, we're back here, but I was living in Denver, Colorado when we had our agrarian conversion, and good friends of the church were accusing us of retreating from community life to live isolated on our homestead. Mm-hmm. And my experience has been the only place you can truly be isolated is in neighborhoods where everyone has their ties together are only by effort.
Yep.
That they have no economics or service-based bonds. They get together because it's good to be with people, but not because they need them.
Yep.
My experience has been actually the homesteading and for me, a rural life has maybe forced community is one word. You know, when you and I have to explain to Gabino why the pigs that kind of belong to us, but we're actually at Shannon's house, knocked over his trash. And did your dogs rummage through my trash? No, it was my pigs, but those were Shannon's pigs. Well, they're at Shannon's, but they're mine and Craig's. Anyway, that's another podcast story. But has that been, so you said, yes, you experienced that charge in literally the opposite reality.
Oh yeah, for sure. Being across the street from the church has been interesting as well.
Wait, I should clarify. That's not our parish.
It's just not our parish.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, maybe one day.
But the pastor's name is Craig.
Yes.
So I'm Jason Craig. Across the street is Craig Tafar. And then there's another Craig, Pastor Craig, across the street. All right. But anyway, the church across the street.
They've welcomed us. They're supportive that there's a slaughterhouse across the street from their church. We don't operate on Sundays, so there's very little conflict.
Right.
But I've had a number of those church members stop by and tell me stories about different structures that were on our property or times that they lived on our property, because the old farmhouse that we had to tear down, that was originally built by the first pastor.
Yeah, the founding pastor.
The founding pastor, he granted the land for the church, paid for it to be built, and he was the pastor.
Wow.
And so that there's just entering into the historical reality of a place, the living reality of a place, has been, I mean, more than probably what I expected. My work in the past separated me from any local community reality. I would get on the computer and the phone, and I'd work with people in New York and California and Asia and India, all over the place, and didn't have any means by which to connect with those who lived next to me.
Right. Other than effort. Yeah.
And I tried to make that effort. But.
All right. Well, so you don't know this, but we've gone over what the time we should have been. Okay. Don't worry. Apparently in podcasting, you do whatever you want.
Okay.
But I think we need to come back because perhaps giving people overly romanticized. We should talk about the hard stuff.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking.
How I took your farm.
Craig took the valley. Yes. And now people drive. Yeah. We have a tunnel connecting our land. Craig was my duke, my baron and duke until he kicked the peasantry off of their homestead. We'll tell that story. But also, as you're sitting here talking, like, working together, I'm like, maybe we should get some more pigs over at Shannon's that we have to go get. Yeah. Get to see each other. But no, I think I'd like to have you back. Specifically, I think what you brought up is a fundamental difference in our economic arrangements, that when our work is not a place of our family, mm-hmm. and then our families are also not places of work, mm-hmm. the challenges that come with that. And I want to be careful on the podcast to not, we can point these things out without recommending that everyone do what we have done.
Definitely.
And without, because there are a lot of people, and it's not because I'm not happy to have done, I'm very happy to have done it, but that it's a bigger conversion than a lot of people realize. So, we'll talk on a future podcast. Like, I knew Craig was going to make it when he made head cheese from a pig that we killed at my farm. So this has been Till and Keep Podcast. Craig, thank you for being on it. We'll come back to this.
Thank you, Jason.
This episode of Till and Keep has been brought to you by TAN, Fraternus, and Sword and Spade. Till and Keep is a podcast that shows how the primordial command from God to Adam to till and keep the garden applies whether you toil on a farm or in a concrete jungle. Visit tillandkeeppodcast.com to subscribe and follow the show, and use coupon code TILL25 to get 25% off your next order at tanbooks.com.